from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. This is going to be an action-packed show. I cannot believe how many big guests we have this morning.
Well, why don't you tell the people? You know better than me. Go ahead.
Well, do you know that there are now 20 people running for Seattle mayor? We are going to have the latest candidate joining us coming up at 9:33. His name may sound familiar to you, Casey Sixkiller. So he's going to be joining us. Then at 10:06, we've been wanting to get Seattle's police chief, Adrian Diaz, on to talk to us about the mass exodus of officers. All these cops leaving SPD. What is he going to do now that there is a record low number of deployable officers on the department? So we'll talk about that at 10:06. And then at 10:33, Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer is apparently livid that Pierce County is still stuck at phase two after the governor's announcement yesterday. So we're going to talk about that with him at 10:33.
We got a show, but let's get to it. Yours, Ursula's top five news stories of the day, brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
And on that topic, many restaurants and business owners are breathing a sigh of relief today now that Governor Inslee has paused more rollbacks, at least for the next 2 weeks. All but three counties are remaining at phase three. Pierce County is one of those stuck in the more restrictive phase two, and that has Executive Bruce Dammeyer livid. He says treating different counties differently is not science. For the owner of Fat Zack's Pizza, it is the uncertainty that makes it hard to stay afloat.
Phase two, phase one, phase three, whatever it is, you're constantly having to change. Okay, 25%, 50%.
Zach Jones tells Cairo 7 TV at this point, he just wants to know when it's all going to end.
Ursula, just give me a second. I need to get some things off of my chest. I apologize in advance. Don't insult my intelligence, folks. Governor Jay Inslee, when Pierce County, when their numbers were high, you didn't give them a chance for a pause. But now, coincidentally, I'm going to use that word, King County numbers are high, and now there's this new thing called a pause. Now it's the words being used. And by the way, I went through and I wanted to re-listen to all of the things that Governor Inslee said. And there's some things that stood out to me. It's now considered, quote, an evolving situation. Now, rather than the hospitalizations is up, now it's about hospital stays are getting shorter. This is a continuation of the goalpost being moved. I'm also very disappointed in some of you that have been going back and forth with me defending Governor Jay Inslee, saying, but he's done a good job during the pandemic. Let me address that. Yes, overall, Governor Inslee has done a good job in keeping our state safe, but that has absolutely nothing to do with keeping him accountable when something he does wrong. Why? So if he makes a wrong action that I disagree with, I'm supposed to default to, but he's done such a good job? That ain't how I get down and how I roll. Last year in April, was it right for him to allow public construction but restrict private home construction at the beginning of the pandemic? No, it wasn't. And I called him out on that. It's okay to call things out. Back to this point. Are there decisions that the government has made, Governor Jay Inslee has made, that I agree with? Absolutely, Ursula. And yet, there's others that I don't. And at this present time, in my heart of hearts, I feel like politics are being played right now, and it absolutely stinks. What they're not going to do is continue with that. Last thing I want to point out, Ursula, 2 weeks ago, when that decision was made to roll back for Pierce County and two other counties from phase three to phase two, those were based on the numbers at the end of March. That was the latest data that they were able to use. I said here on the show, I said the numbers don't tell the real story. I said vaccines are happening. Kids are, of course, in school. And some of those kids that do test positive for COVID are asymptomatic. That's tough. So there is spread when it comes to COVID cases. I asked during that time, 2 weeks ago, I said, hey, maybe there should just be a warning and kind of like a wait and see. When we have the executive, Bruce Dammeyer, on at 10:30, I want to ask him if he asked the governor for a pause. And the last, I'll leave it at this, Ursula, is this. I don't like the moving goalposts, and it is just confusing to all. And like that business owner says, just tell us when it's going to be the right way. The Evolve situations, hospital stays shorter. It just seems to fit the narrative. I'm done.
Okay. I love your passion.
Okay.
I don't want to be an apologist for the governor.
Okay.
I understand everyone's frustration. I wish we could just give a date. And I think maybe the easiest way to give a date would be to say, hey, we can open at this date if we can get 60 or 70% of us vaccinated. Maybe that's just the best way to do it. However, I want to give you a few facts to go with your passion. I looked it up. So the 14-day case rate per 100,000 for Pierce County as of 3 days ago was 374. Now, just remember, phase two, where Pierce County is right now, allows for 200 to 350 cases per 100,000. So as of 3 days ago, Pierce County was above what's allowed for phase two. So theoretically, and maybe I should say technically, Pierce County should be able to roll back to phase one. Pierce County also reported nearly 180 new COVID cases just on Tuesday alone, with two additional deaths. Pierce County also had new hospitalizations per 100,000 over 7 days. That's supposed to stay between 5 to 10 in phase two. Pierce County was at 8.7. So that's where it was still good. So really, if you look at it, as frustrating as it is for the county, maybe you should be happy that you didn't go to phase one, which was considered. So in fact, this pause did benefit Pierce County as well. I mean, that's a lot of numbers to absorb. And I know it's but maybe there was a break for Pierce County, given what is actually happening.
Hey, I just want to just say this last thing. And you're right, Ursula. Us going back and forth, you and I, we on the same team. We agree to disagree. I'm just going to say this right here. Isn't it a funny coincidence? Right with me now. Is it a funny coincidence that when King County rises above the threshold, there's this new thing called a pause? And my question to you and others is this.
But that pause, again, helped Pierce County as well, because could have gone to phase one.
I'm not talking about Pierce County. I'm talking about King County only. Isn't it a coincidence that once they get over the numbers, there's this grace of a pause? That has never happened before. Why hasn't that happened before? Is it because the King County area is the, like, I'm not saying Governor Jay Inslee is going to be the one running again, but there will be a Democrat that will be in that place. Is that because the majority of those support come from King County? I don't know the answer to those questions.
Or you could look at it as, again, he has been hearing everybody saying, why do we need to roll back? Can we not? It's not just King County that didn't roll back. It's every other county as well. No one rolled back, and it's just for 2 weeks. So Snohomish County didn't even know about this decision. What I think is crazy is that these decisions are being made like an hour before they're announced. That seems like, okay, wait a minute. But the governor tried to explain that in recent weeks, and also the King County health officer said, in recent days, at least, there seemed to be a plateau. So if you can look at those numbers, I mean, because there is a lag time, if you can look at those numbers and say, well, there has been a plateau, maybe we're going in the right direction, let's see if this continues for another 2 weeks before we do something that is going to be harmful, I say that's a good thing.
You don't feel any inconsistencies in any of this, Ursula? You don't feel
did I say that?
No. Okay, I'm asking.
But I think if you take the moment to look at actually some of the numbers that are available, whether you believe it or not, I just gave you a bunch that shows that Pierce County really should be in phase one. So you did get a pause. You didn't go to phase one.
Okay, fair. Pierce County did not go to phase one. I'm not talking about Pierce County right now. I'm talking about King County.
Well,
I'm talking about the grace that they were given. Has this happened before? Has there been a pause given yet?
I think you're buying into some of the conspiracy theory. Seriously,
conspiracy theory?
Yeah, that it's because he wants to just make people in Pierce County happy because that's where his base is. He's not running again. And again, he's not doing this in a vacuum. There are health people who are making those decisions with him. So it sounded like he was looking at every way to not have to roll back. That's what's happening. That includes Pierce County. Okay, we got to go on. A popular hangout in Seattle's University District has now lost its license, at least for now, because it was often packed with maskless customers. Health inspectors say Flowers Restaurant and Bar has a history of not following COVID protocols, dating actually back to August of last year, and this restaurant's been racking up complaints since then. Just last month, the inspector said the place was jam-packed when indoor seating was supposed to be at 50% capacity, and they actually observed wait staff serving drinks without wearing masks. And the inspector's report also pointed out that one of the owners repeatedly said that he didn't care about people or the government's orders or COVID safety rules. These are all claims that co-owner denies. He says that his employees were double-masked.
I believe in following the rules. I don't want and encourage that at all. I might have some disagreements. I might have some problems. Either way, I am not going to encourage that. So I really suggest from the bottom of my heart that all restaurants make sure you continue to do the right thing. Even if there are other restaurants that aren't doing the right thing, you never know when you are the one that gets closed down or you are the one that gets a big fine. I will never encourage to not follow the rules.
And I've been going to restaurants ever since indoor dining was allowed again, as I've been sharing with everybody. The vast majority of businesses I've gone to do an excellent job of following protocols. But I have seen some, and just yesterday you said you saw some in Pierce County where there is absolutely no evidence that we are still fighting a pandemic. For those, I have zero sympathy for them. And places like this one in the U District where they blatantly disregard safety requirements and then whine when they're shut down. As is so often said, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. But unfortunately, these bad choices affect a much wider community as well. Former President Trump is not going to be returning to Facebook, at least for now. The social network's quasi-independent oversight board has just voted to uphold the ban from the platform after his account was suspended for 4 months. Was suspended 4 months ago for inciting violence that led to that deadly January 6th Capitol riot. While upholding the ban, though, board co-chair Michael McConnell says it was not fair for Facebook to suspend him indefinitely.
The board is holding today that Facebook's treatment of Mr. Trump's future posting privileges did not meet these standards and cannot continue without a sober and comprehensive review, applying the same rules to Mr. Trump, neither better nor worse, as applied to everyone else.
So to that end, Facebook now has 6 months to re-examine its arbitrary penalty.
It is not permissible for Facebook to keep a user off the platform for an undefined period with no criteria for when or whether the account will be restored.
So what do you think about this decision?
I think Facebook is a private entity, and I think that we are trying to open up Pandora's box and go into something where, hey, 1 minute you guys don't want the government to have control over private entities, and then the next minute you do. So in this case, if Facebook continues this, if that's their plan, so be it. I guess my question would be, what does it take? Like, if I'm let's go away from Donald Trump. Let's just go away. Let's just go to us. Any of us. What if we get banned for some behavior that Facebook deemed unacceptable and they banned us? Will there be a fight for us to get back on that platform? I don't know the answer to that question. I've never done enough to be kicked off of any social media platform. But I guess what I'm saying is there a criteria? Are there things that can get you permanently banned from social media? I don't know the answer to that either. But I would assume, Ursula, that a private company has that right to set that criteria.
But this private company now has a bigger reach than even, you know, radio stations and TV stations, you know, like ours. And so I think that even though it is a private company, there need to be, you have to look at the potential impact that they can have. And while I personally think this was the right move, because former President Trump is still peddling the big lie about, you know, him winning the election. I do think that Facebook or Instagram, owned by the same company, they do need to be much more consistent. So this move in particular has angered both Republicans and Democrats, with Republicans saying, you know, what's going to stop them from silencing you? Right now it is President Trump, but it could be anybody. I do think that there is some inconsistency in how it is being applied. Democrats say Facebook makes it way too easy for people like Trump or others to spread lies and disinformation. So I like the fact that they're saying, hey, for right now, the ban was justified, but you need to make much more clear what it is that is going to get you kicked off permanently. Is this going to be forever? And then how do you make it so that it's consistent? And again, I understand your argument about it being a private company, but it is a private company with a much bigger reach and a much bigger impact than so many others. Okay, real quick, because this is breaking news. Peloton is now recalling its treadmills following more than 70 incidents, including the death of one child and then injuries involving at least 29 others. The recall comes a month after the Consumer Product Safety Commission warned households with kids and pets to immediately stop using these Peloton treadmills. Is it Peloton Tread Plus?
There's so two of them. Different kinds? Okay. Yeah, there's a Tread Plus and the Tread.
Okay, so both of them apparently. And then this also comes 2 months after Peloton itself, the company, cautioned people to keep kids and pets away from exercise equipment. And now this morning, CEO John Foley is apologizing, saying they should have acted more quickly to recall the treadmills. He says that was a mistake.
Looking at the portfolio right now, Ursula, the stock is down right now 12%. And you know what they say sometimes in this world? Buy the dip. That's right. Buy the dip. it's not really funny. Because there has unfortunately been one death that has occurred from this. There have been, according to what they say, 70 injuries that have been with this. As you know, and everyone knows, I do have the Peloton treadmill that luckily I get onto every single day.
What makes it so different from other treadmills, though? I need to know, because I don't have one.
Yeah, it's a beast. And what I mean by a beast is it's really big, and the controls on the sides, it's the wheel control. So for an example, Ursula, if I want to increase my speed, there's a knob right there. All I got to do is kind of spin it forward. Whereas on a regular treadmill, you might have to, you know, take your index finger and push the buttons up and down and all that. It's a little different. Well, with the Peloton Tread, you can go from 0 to 10 in a matter of seconds.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah. So I totally understand how it could be a problem.
So if you have one of these, you're supposed to immediately stop using it and then contact the company for a refund.
Yeah. Yes.
Or some kind of repair.
Ursula, real quick before we get away from this.
Yeah.
I just want to set the record straight. Did you accuse me of buying into conspiracy theories?
I suggested that maybe some of them could be influencing you on this particular situation.
No. Okay. All right. Still ahead. What we got coming ahead, Ursula?
I am proposing to pilot the largest guaranteed basic income program in the nation.
That is the newest candidate in the crowded race for Seattle mayor, and Casey Sixkiller will be joining us next. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. This is your Wednesday morning edition. Thank you so much for joining us. The already crowded Seattle mayoral race just got even more crowded. Seattle's deputy mayor for operations, Casey Sixkiller, has jumped into the race, and he joins us now on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Casey.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on to the show. So tell us, I believe there are now 20 candidates for mayor. What do you think makes you stand out amongst the others, and why you think you are the answer for what the city needs right now?
Well, look, I am all excited to get in this race and start engaging with voters and talking to them about some of the ideas I have around how we come together as one city to actually make lasting positive change and move forward and start to show progress on addressing the various challenges that our city's facing today. And, you know, I think things that distinguish me in this race, number one, I grew up here, right? I'm raising three young kids here. And I want them to be able to see that we can actually come together and solve problems. It's what I've been doing my whole career. Growing up here as a young person, getting involved in my community, trying to make a positive impact, working in Washington, D.C., bringing folks together around common and practical solutions. And I've been doing that both when I worked for Dow Constantine at King County and over this past year as we've tried to, you know, scale, as we tried, as we succeeded in scaling up resources to get us through a very difficult year with the impacts of COVID. So, you know, I think I'm bringing real world experience, you know, big, bold ideas that I think match the time that we're in as a city, and a record of showing how you bring folks together, even those that don't agree with you or you may not agree with them, to find common ground, push through the rhetoric and the gridlock, and get the job done.
You talked about bold ideas. Let's give us a couple of those bold ideas that you have that will help make the city of Seattle better.
Well, look, this past year, right, COVID sort of laid bare all of the inequities that exist across our city, right? We saw too many of our families are living on the edge. And for them, a future in Seattle is getting further and further out of reach. Our small businesses, the ones that are left, are barely hanging on. And our neighborhoods, the special sauce of Seattle, yeah, they're struggling with the impacts of empty storefronts, homelessness, and rising crime. So, you know, I'm getting in this race to be able to talk about ways that we make Seattle more affordable for our working families. I think that starts with actually investing in the future of our working families. So, you know, number one is I've put forward an idea for us to pilot the largest guaranteed basic income program in the nation to try to lift up 16,000 families that we know are falling behind or have been left behind by our economy today. You know, the fact is we've got a ton of folks who are making less than $50,000 a year in Seattle when our median household income is $102,000 a year. So I think, you know, this is our moment where we sort of see if by getting additional resources into the hands of working families, you know, if that is going to help them thrive in this city and not have to choose between paying rent or buying food to feed their kids. The second is, you know, expanding childcare. Childcare, I'm a dad. Childcare is super expensive. And I think by expanding childcare, childcare offerings across the city and capping that copay at 7% of household income, you know, we're doing two things. Number one, we're helping make sure that working families don't have to choose between staying in the workforce or trying to figure out how they're going to pay for childcare. Then also giving those kids, you know, a running start, right? We know a third of kids across the city enter kindergarten already behind. Investing in early childhood development starts with childcare. And I think, you know, those are two, you know, super important investments in our working families.
Casey,
the second
go ahead. Well, I just, because we're going to be running out of time, so I want to just get a couple of things. One is one of the most visible problems that people, not just in the city of Seattle, see, but basically the entire region, the entire state, and sometimes the nation, often talks about our homelessness crisis. Just in the little amount of time that we have, what specifically would you do to make a dent in what's happening? And I know that you have been the point person on homelessness for the current administration. So what makes you think that we're going to believe something will happen with you at the mayor's position?
Well, first, you're right. I have been the point person on homelessness this past year. COVID threw us a little bit of a curveball, but you know, the reality is we've been struggling with addressing the homelessness, increasing homelessness population for 20 years. You know, my experience, you know, this past year has told me a couple things. Number one, we're not necessarily investing in the right places. every dollar we invest in shelter is a dollar we're not investing in a permanent place for folks to live. You know, we need to strike a better balance. I also know where the bottlenecks are. And one of those big bottlenecks is getting folks transitioned from shelter into permanent places to live. Doing that creates more opportunities for us to get folks from the street inside, or more importantly, from our parks and off our streets. So, you know, my proposal to add to, you know, send to the voters a package to raise resources is for us to really supercharge that effort of bringing more permanent places for folks to call home. 3,000 new units in my first term, in addition to the other units that are already in production today. I think it's an important moment here, right, where we have a regional challenge that requires a regional response. 40% of the folks that we served last year in the city of Seattle were not last housed here. But if we want to make a visible difference and show residents that we're making progress, we've got to create and we have to invest now in creating places for people to go, but tie those investments to actually making sure our parks are clear and open for everyone to enjoy, to make sure that our businesses can welcome back customers as the economy continues to reopen.
Casey Sixkiller, one of your candidates for Seattle mayor, we appreciate your time and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Still ahead, Ursula, we need to talk. We need to talk about an experience that I had down here in Tacoma, in which a lady walks up to my car and is berating me about me parking. Yes, I'll explain what that's about next. You guys are listening to the G and Ursula Show. G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. Coming up at 10:06, we have a guest, an interview with Seattle Police Chief Diaz.
Adrian Diaz
will join the show. We will ask him about all the things that are going on, but more importantly, we will definitely ask what's going on with the more than 200 officers that have left the department in the past year. So that happens at 10:06, and right now we need to talk. Ursula, I'm down in Tacoma. This was on Sunday. As you know, I had a great day. Lily and I went out and about, and we stop off, and I'm in a parking lot. I'm getting ready to park, and this lady comes up to my car, and she starts to berate me, and I didn't understand what was going on, and she's telling me, like, you need to park, and all this screaming. I open a door, and she's close to my car, Ursula, and I said, get away from my car. Who are you? Right? No identification of who she was or nothing. Just there berating me, screaming in my car. And she says, you can get the H out of our parking lot. Get out of here.
Because she said you were, what, taking too much room? Were you part?
I have no idea.
Yeah, but was this your big truck?
This is my big truck.
Okay, and was she thinking you're taking too much room?
No. I think she thought that I didn't see behind me because I was repositioning my truck. Either way.
Yeah, okay. She was rude.
She was very rude. And so there were other people in the parking lot, and they asked, hey, do you know that lady? I said, no. Well, Lillian sees that she goes into a store. The store happens to be a marijuana shop. Okay? Now, Lillian goes to follow so we can go and speak to the manager. We go inside. Lillian asks for the manager. The manager comes out. His name is Joel. Lillian goes to explain the story, what happened.
Is the employee there?
Like, the employee, yes, she's right there. She's kind of walks through a couple times. And Lillian is explaining to the manager, Joel, that this person is very rude. Joel asked us, you know, if we could go outside. We're talking about it, and he was apologizing. I'm very sorry. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Here's my card and everything, and we exchanged names. I said, hey, my name is G Scott and everything, and then he goes, oh, okay. So then Lillian and I leave out of the store. And by the way, Joel does, he did say that, hey, I do listen to the show. I don't want to leave that part out.
Ursula,
okay. All right. He does listen to the show. He said, hey, nice to meet you. So we go next door. The reason, and by the way, no, we were not going to the marijuana shop.
I was going to ask you.
No.
I wasn't passing judgment. I just want to get the full picture, as you know.
There's a restaurant right next door to the marijuana place. And so Lillian and I go in there to go eat. Well, the manager, the assistant manager, Joel, comes over and asks us if he could buy our lunch for what we had just gone through. And I said, well, yeah, thank you. And he even left a tip for the people for that lunch. Yeah, it was cool. So I do have the card. I am going to make sure, I haven't had a chance to email the owner of the place, but I am going to make sure I email them, tell them exactly what happened, but also at the same time to let them know how one of their employees, Joel, did such a phenomenal job in addressing the situation. So the point of me telling this story is to say sometimes we have to allow people and or businesses to be able to make up for what's happened and allow them grace to do that.
Well, I love that story. So, and when Lillian, well, you and Lillian went into that shop, what were you hoping to do? Like, what were you? I'm guessing you weren't demanding to fire the employee, or you were just wanting them to
address it,
or just know that, hey, this is happening, and this is probably not how you want to treat people.
100%. Like, this whole thing was bad, right?
Yeah,
like,
and was witnessed by other people too.
Yes, witnessed by other people, and so this is definitely not something that they wanted to happen. But I got to tell you, yes, we just wanted to do that. I mean, do we want to fire the lady? No. I mean, maybe she had a bad day, but I mean, she took that out on us.
Yes.
No, I'm not saying we want them to get fired, but we also want them to know, like, hey, one of your employees is doing this, and guess what? They were doing this while wearing your company shirt.
Exactly. It's so funny anymore how people forget about customer service. And that is a sweeping statement, and I think that there are still so many businesses that understand that when you have someone who is front-facing and is dealing with customers, whether it's in your parking lot or not, that is a reflection of you. And, you know, we talked about it with the Chocolati situation, which finally, I believe, was resolved.
Right.
It took a while. Now, I got to ask this, though, because I'm sure this is going through the mind of some of our listeners.
Okay.
Do you think you would have been treated the same way had you not been G. Scott and, oh, I recognize your name?
I don't know the answer to that.
Or maybe you give the benefit of the doubt.
I give the benefit of the doubt that they would have treated anyone the same if they would have come in with the complaint. And by the way, it sure was a busy operation. It's called Mary Mart in Tacoma, Ursula. And so let me ask you this, Ursula. Keep it a buck. When I told you that it was a marijuana place, were you thinking I was in there to purchase some things?
Initially, I didn't rule out that possibility.
Okay. Hey, but a big thank you to Joel at Mary Mart. Really appreciate you. Coming up next, Seattle Police Chief Adrian Diaz will join the show. It's the G and Ursula Show.